Today I was told traffic quite bad. Huh? Most of you are caught in a jam. Huh? Don't worry, meant to be. Huh? Then we should rejoice. We are just now before we start, I think Eng Lian and Susan, they all came early. Oh, I saw them doing the bowing. Very good. If they continue like that, huh? Very fast, their mindfulness become very, very different, I tell you. You just do what you all did like that. Huh? Every day, about 20 minutes, you can spray out 2 times or 3 times. You spray out 3 times, then 10 minutes will do. 2 times, 15 minutes. 1 time, I think you have to do 20 minutes. The best is at least 2 times, morning and before you sleep. Then in between, when you free, you do. As you do the bowing, your mindfulness will develop on its own. You will suddenly realize what sati is. You don't try to know, you just bow. You can use either Mandarin or English. For those Mandarin, you can recite Namo Bensi Si Jia Moni Fo, then you pay respect mindfully. Then when you move out, body and mind as one, then you recite Namo Bensi Si Jia Moni Fo, then again you go down. Then as you do until you become very skillful, you can recite. As you recite, you pay respect together. You can do it. Then it become like the mindfulness and the chanting become one. There is no one reciting one, but it's just an awareness of it. Then later on, after you finish, all of your movement, you start to see them on its own. You don't have to try to be mindful of them. Even how you go down and how you come out and how you turn, how you move, you become very different. Then after that, you will understand what I used to tell you. Every movement, every action is in the present moment without thought on. Then you realize, how come you are now like that? In the past, you cannot. Because you don't have real sati. You use the mind to note, and that is not sati. The real sati is without word. Then after that, your whole mind is in sati. Then everything you see, the specific phenomenal awareness, there is no like perception or what, it just flow. You want to know, you can know. Otherwise, it's just an awareness. Then all the hearing also same. No concept. No labeling, but you have to live life on the sound. That's why you have to perceive. So perceiving it is okay. The moment you perceive, you don't dwell on it, understand? You just understand, then you move on. Then the awareness come back. Then whatever you experience is the same. That moment you understand, that's it. Then after that, the awareness come back. I read to you this part where Hui Neng mentioned in the commentary of his Diamond Sutta. This one is very good. You listen. The unsurpassed enlightenment requires that you are able to recognize your own true mind and see your own original nature, unborn and undying. When you see your true nature at all times, moment to moment, with no lingering over anything at all. This is what I mean. Means you don't dwell, understand? You don't get caught inside there. As one is real, all are real. Mind rights objects are themselves suchness as it is. Consciousness of suchness as it is real truth. Means the direct seeing. If you see in this way, this is the inherent nature of the unsurpassed enlightenment. So when you understand, you will know what cultivation is. And when your mind transforms, you will be able to do exactly what the six patriarchs mentioned under the Diamond Sutta. So this is just for sharing today. Because I saw them doing the bowing. Very good. Nobody asked them to do, but because they have started doing it. So you can do this until the sati come. I think within less than 2 months, it should come. Then you will know what sati is. And that real sati is the one that cultivates the four foundations. That one is the one that can see many, many things. The direct seeing, your mental intention, starting with kaya, then go to feeling. It go by itself through sati. Then after that, the content of consciousness, you can see on its own. Last time before this sati come, it's all theory. You cannot really see. So that's why this cultivation is very different when you develop the real sati. The real sati, when it come, you can sit very easily. No need to train your mind anymore. Like the mind sweeping method, metta or thing. You can do it if you want to. But then you realize actually you don't need to. Because the moment you sit down, that sati is so stable. There is no thought at all. Silent. Then even after a very busy day, let's say, in the midst of career or your daily life, then you have to attend to many, many things. Not a problem at all. Even during that time, you use your brain, your mind, the sankhara. The moment you sit down, I still remember, because you know how to relax and silent, this sankhara will continue, understand or not? But it will slow down on its own. On its own, it will slow down. Then all of a sudden, everything just stops. Then you go back to the natural state. Then you realize meditation is not about fighting all these things, trying to be peaceful, want to focus, want to concentrate, want to go into absorption. No more. The real meditation is no meditation, no doing, no thought involved, no cultivator, no meditator. Just the silent. But human beings cannot do that because of the mental hindrance. They don't have the spiritual faculty. Their sati are not stable. Their faith are not strong. That's why they cannot do that. So tonight, oh, recorded. I thought Hui Rong hasn't come. Sadhu, thank you, Hui Rong. So we can have our meditation now. We off the light. And now I don't have to off. They know where to off. My wife marked the three switches. You off according to the red color one. Then the other top extreme left. Okay, good. So we can have about, I think, half an hour of meditation. So tonight is very good. Sadhu. Oh, actually you can have more than half an hour, but I will set half an hour. Okay, good. Oh, sorry, I read the clock wrong. Now it's already 8:50. You got, maybe I give you 15 minutes. Okay, you can start your meditation. 15 minutes time, I will ring the bell. You can lie down if you want, and you can just sit, relax, silent. You need to train your mind. You go ahead. Start off with the mind sweeping method. Then combine with metta, loving kindness. Loving kindness will bring about a wholesome mind, a good mind, inner well-being to your mind state. So when you develop mind sweeping method to train your mind, it will become peaceful, quiet, silent and aware. This inner peace is very important too. Inner peace leading to the inner well-being when you combine with metta. Then you stabilize it with whatever skillful means or object of meditation, like anapanasati, or even what they have taught you last time, the rising and falling of the abdomen. But you don't go and look for it. You just silent everything and feel your abdomen area. Then when you have sati, the phenomena will come to you. The sati will detect the rising and falling without words. And it will understand exactly the whole movement without words. So when your mind can stay with the phenomena, that is kaya nupassana. That is awareness of your kaya, whatever activity within your form, your physical form. Your breath is also part of your kaya. Then any movement, any activity from your kaya, you can feel them. Then for those who use other skillful means like dynamic meditation, you can just move your hand and maintain awareness of it. When the mind and the movement of the physical hand is one, that is sati, is the same. Then when you use your mantra and chanting, it's even more effective, you know how to do it. Because the mantra has affinity with the great being. Then when you can recite until the mindfulness and the chanting become one, means there is no one to chant. That is sati. Then after that, you just relax and silent and allow it to stabilize until the sati become very, very refined, until there is like little or no more movement. Then everything slow down, everything become like very still, very quiet and very silent, no thought. And that is the meditative mind. That is what pasati is all about, the silent mind. Before you reach pasati, when you have sati, you will experience the byproduct of meditation, which is the inner peace born of piti, or spiritual calmness, spiritual rapture. And as you relax and allow it to be, piti becomes sukha. Then sukha will develop a lot of what they call bliss, meditative bliss. It's a very refined type of joy until it becomes so blissful. Then the whole of the mind becomes very different. Then after that, you continue to relax into it and silent. The bliss will transform into stillness, tranquility, which we call pasati. So this is how you train your mind. And for those who already train, you just relax, silent, aware, then allow it to be. You can stay either with your breathing, the subtle breathing, or you can move it on to your heart area. Then you can feel whatever movement, vibration, or your heartbeat. You just stay there, relax, aware, and silent. Don't do anything, just silent and stay there. Then you feel your heart area. Wherever you can detect any vibration or heartbeat, you just stay there until that movement, that activity, that vibration or that heartbeat become very quiet, very still. Then like nothing, you can detect, you cannot detect anything. That is a very good state. That is your silent mind, your true mind. Then you just continue to relax deep into it. One day, you will detect the gateway. Then many things will happen when you detect the gateway. When you can relax and silent, then you become beautiful. All of your whatever yin-yang energy that you have developed through meditation, even your qigong, yoga, or whatever, they will start to melt inside. Then you become very quiet, very peaceful, very still, very soothing. This is the internal meditative experience that you will go through. When you can develop that, means you are very near to the higher practice where you can develop the meditative experience or understanding using your true mind. Connecting to your gateway will allow you to detect your true mind. And this is the most beautiful part of meditation. So when you can do that, you can recuperate very fast. You become quiet very fast. You become still very fast. So your meditation become very different. You don't need to train. The mind state just arises by itself. Okay, I'll let you meditate on your own. brothers who want to still continue the meditation, you can for the seven-hour slowly, mindfully come out of meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness that you have developed for as long as you can. This is the mind state that you need to develop the meditation in daily life. Here is the form of meditation. You come here to train your mind, then you develop this training. After you have stabilized your spiritual faculty, you actually technically no need to train. You can just silent and meditate. Then the best posture is later on you will come to know lying down, because that is your most relaxed posture, silent and still. There is no blockage or energy. And this is just pure awareness. This is very safe and yet very fast type of meditation. Okay, now we will go on to page 6. We will chant the invocation to the devas. I will read to you the meaning. In this universe, in their entirety, let the deities or devas come here. Let them hear the good doctrine of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the doctrine. This is the time to listen to the doctrine. This is the time to listen to the doctrine. Samanta Chakavalesu Atra gacchantu devata saddhammang muni rajasa sunantu sakamokkhadang dhammasavanankalo ayang badanta dhammasavanankalo ayang badanta Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Namo Atasa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa Namo Atasa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa Namo Atasa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa Iti Peso Bhagava Arahang Sama Sambuddho Vijacarana sampanno sugato lokavidu anutaro purisa dhamma sarati satta deva manusanang buddho bhagavati Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Sanditiko Akaliko Ehi Paseko Opanayiko Pacheyatang Veditatbu Vinohiti Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Ujupatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Nyayapatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Samichi patipanno bhagavato savakasango Yadidang chattari purisa yokani Atta purisa pugala Esa bhagavato savakasango Akineyo Anjali Karaniyo Anuterang Punya Ketang Lokasati Sadhu Sadhu Sadhu. Okay, we'll pay respect to Trupa Jam. Betang Pajami. Damang Pajami. Sanghang Pajami. Okay. You can be seated. Then we can start our sharing. Okay. Today we will go direct into the Diamond Sutta. We will at each page. I also cannot remember which page will be. I normally fold up the page. 48. Ah, correct. I fold it up, but the folding is too small. Yeah, page 48. Turn to page 48. Okay, I think we have finished the fifth one. To be a great bodhisattva or mahasattva. The fifth one is he cultivated the great conduct. We have finished that one. Okay, now we go to number six. He passes through great kalpas. Did I finish the top part of page 48? Have I gone through it with you? Gone through already. Anyway, we just read through to recollect. Okay. We turn to the page before that, 47, last paragraph. In cultivation, one must be patient with suffering and fatigue. Practicing the great conduct, one must be patient, yielding, and generous. One must practice or cultivate the six perfections, the first of which is giving, means dana, for the benefit of others, and not seeking only to help oneself. So this part is very important. You must have patience with suffering and fatigue, because to take the bodhisattva vow, to fulfill all this vow, you remember the four basic vow? First one is to liberate all beings and bring them across. Second one is what? To endure all vexation and suffering. So that's why you must have a lot of patience with suffering and fatigue. Then, practicing or cultivating the great conduct, one must be patient, yielding, and generous. Yielding means you accord and flow, you are not rigid. Then one must cultivate the six perfection. The first of the six perfection is dana, parami. Then Shenhua make a commentary, say, I've seen members of the Sangha begging. Actually, it's not begging. When they go for alms round, it's not begging. But this one is really begging. According to him, he said, someone say, their cultivation of the way is solely involved with asking for money, not with giving it. Ah, but when bhikkhu gives money, they do not advertise it. I have known Dhamma master who was so truly committed to helping people that if asked, they would offer his flesh to be eaten and blood to drink. For the sake of others, they would willingly offer their own flesh and bones to heaven and earth. It is just that you have not known a person who has truly resolved his mind on Bodhi and who cultivates great conduct. Or perhaps you have, but didn't recognize him. Wow, that one, you better be careful. You met but didn't recognize her. Make sure you got noble info power. Otherwise, if you have any karmic negativity, I tell you, you will have to pay for it. And it's very, very serious. For such a one cannot say to you, I'm one who cultivates great conduct. Since he cannot tell you, you have no way to know that he is the one who can endure wind, rain, cold, heat, hunger, and thirst, bearing what people cannot bear, yielding what people cannot yield, eating what people cannot eat, and enduring what people cannot endure. On the other hand, those who imitate the style of a seasoned cultivator in order to impress others are useless. They will say, look at me, I can eat what others cannot eat. This is false giving. Playing the great how to pronounce this word? Mata, huh? Is it mata? I also don't know how to pronounce. Is it mata? Mata, huh? And relinquishing house and home, family and wealth, for the sake of appearances, is false giving. No matter how good the property or how fine the wife, if one's self-sacrifice is done as a public display and giving is not sincere or true, if it is not done for the sake of appearances, then giving is cultivating the great conduct. So you have to understand your mental intention behind all this is very important. A lot of people, they tend to have this type of greed or selfishness. Because if they want them to donate, you know what they want. They want their name to be printed. They want their name to be recognized. Then they want the press people to come. Then they want the world to know. Then they have this, what they call, like you say, they are doing is for publicity, understand? Appearances, understand? Means not genuine. So these are the people who cannot develop wholesomeness in the pure way because their action is out of selfishness or greed for reputation and all those things. Yes, they are willing to give, no doubt, but they have another motive behind, understand? Their giving is not sincere or generous, not because they want to help people. They want to have reputation for themselves. They want people to recognize their philanthropy quality, their generosity and all those things. So if you do that, then you cannot be a bodhisattva. Okay, we go on to the sixth one. He passed through great kapas. You know what is kapas? World cycle. The cultivation of a bodhisattva involves planting good roots, but not before one Buddha only. One who fully cultivates passes through the three great asaṅkhaya kapas. That's why three great asaṅkhaya kapas is the major kapas or world cycle. He seeks the great fruit that is the last of the seven qualities. The bodhisattva way is cultivated by those who seek the great fruit. Foreign land are not sought after because bodhisattvas are not small landlords who set about conquering other countries in order to build an empire. Only Anuttara Samyat Sambohi, the highest fruit of cultivation, is the goal of great beings, means to be a Sammasambuddha. A Mahasattva, one whose conduct encompasses those seven aspects should thus subdue his thought. So the question is, how? In no particular manner, but rather, tas-tas is the direct statement. So you know what is tas-tas? Eh? Suchness. That's why those great beings, they know. It is the principal substance of real mind. And so it is said to have no particular manner of execution. So now you understand why Dhamma is not rigid. Eh? If you're very rigid, eh? You can say bye-bye to cultivation. The absence of distinction is referred to as tas, rather than described in superficial terms. That's why no mark. One should subdue his thought by thinking, I must cause all living beings to enter nirvana without residue and to be taken across to extinction. All living beings may be divided into 12 categories. Of the 12 which are discussed in detail in the Surangama Sutta, 10 are listed in this Sutta text. Those not listed include those not totally with form and those not totally without form. Those not totally with form include living beings which basically have form, but which maintain it only through parasitic relationship with other living beings, such as transparent jellyfish. They have no eye and use shrimp to act as their seeing faculty. Those not totally without form include living beings which basically are formless, but which voluntarily appear when called upon through mantras, such as mantra spirit and ghost. The 12 categories of beings, you all heard of, eh? I think it's in the Sutta also. The first four of the 12 categories are those born from egg, due to the thought process. Then those born from womb, like mammal, they call mammal. You know what is mammal? Reptile is born from egg. Mammal is born from the womb, understand? Then the third one is born from moisture due to the process of union. Then the fourth one is born by transformation due to the process of separation. In the process which involves thought, emotion, union and separation, doubt is created. With the eraser of doubt, karma is made. Actually, it's delusion, not knowing the truth. With the existence of karma, one undergoes retribution, each according to his kind. Each and every birth depends upon causal condition which determines the retribution to be received. This part, if you want to understand karma deeper, is very useful. Beings are born from egg due to their delusion, thought. An example by way of analogy is the setting hen which brood over her eggs from morning to night thinking, the little chicks should come out soon. Come out, little chick. She thinks for a long process until finally she thinks them out of their shell. The egg breaks into chicken, brought forth from thought. So this is how Shenhua has explained it. Then beings that are born from the womb due to emotion. The womb exists because of love and emotion which occurs between male and female. The intercourse of this love and emotion results under the requisite condition in pregnancy in the womb. So human beings, mammals, they are included under this one. Beings are born from moisture due to union. The union of karma with warm produce under the right condition. Moisture-borne creature, example bacteria, virus, and all those, I think mainly microorganism. Even E. coli, germs and other things. Beings are born by transformation due to separation. When karmic formation separates from something old and becomes something new, there is birth by transformation. As for example, the metamorphosis of a moth. The being with form refers to beings such as auspicious and inauspicious essence, which result from astrological phenomena. Such being takes form, but the form is not permanent. Beings without form refers to beings in the four formless rhyme, the heavenly rhyme of the boundless emptiness, means space. They got the four, what they call formless rhyme, infinite space. Then you have the infinite consciousness. Here they use boundless, the word is infinite. And the third one is the rhyme of nothingness whatsoever, and the rhyme of neither thought nor perception or non-perception. Beings with thought refers to the spirits, the ghosts, and essence, either good manifestation like bodhisattva or evil roots like wake freaks. Beings without thought refer to those who have turned into earth, tree, metal, or rock. An example by way of analogy is the mountain in Hong Kong called Gazing After. I got such mountain in Hong Kong. In Mandarin called what? Gazing After Her Husband. I don't know. This one, I haven't heard. Next time, must ask Hong Kong people. So, named because in the past, there was a woman who climbed the mountain daily with her child in order to stare out to the sea in search for her husband, who had gone off to war and never returned. Because she sustained that solitary thought for a long time, the woman eventually turned into a stone. High on the mountain can still be seen the stone figure of a woman bearing her child as she grazes. She stands gazing out to sea. Maybe this one is, they must have some of this, what they call, what you call, story, legend in Hong Kong. Maybe Hong Kong people believe. Beings who are not totally with thought refers to living beings who have involuntarily born in the form of another creature due to that creature's thought power, such as the larva of the mulberry moth, whose body is transformed into that of a wasp through the thought power of the lone wasp. The wasp readies its nest and places within it some mulberry larva. It then proceeds for 7 days to recite a mantra over the insect. The mantra is simply, "Be like me, be like me." After 7 days, the mulberry larva becomes a wasp. Now, this one is another way of describing. Beings who are not totally without thought refers to those whose body are originally thoughtless metal, but who come into existence within that matter due to the longing of the parents. Consequently, those beings become possessed by extremely bizarre thoughts. I must cause them all to enter nirvana without residue and be taken across to extinction. The I here is the fake I of the bodhisattva, used expediently to communicate with living beings who still possess the view of self. This part you all understand not? Xuanhua used the word fake or false. You know what is this I or not? You all have gone through the green book. Who are you? What are you? So when the Buddha say you are born of your karma, adhere to your karma, conditioned and supported by your karma. You are what you are because of your karma. Who is that guy? Who is that guy? Who is the Buddha referring to when he mentioned that? You have to get this understood. The five daily contemplation you contemplate every day, what do you reflect and contemplate? I am born of my karma, heir to my karma, conditioned and supported by my karma. I am what I am because of my karma. Then the Buddha said, anatta, non-self, nobody there. Then who is that I? Who is that I? No. Wow, so fast, cannot remember. I better write on the board so that it goes in. Maybe this one I can rub off. When the Buddha say, you are born of your karma, or the I that you pronounce, what does it mean? Who is the one that is affected by karma? Give you a hint. Who? Form and mind, understand? This fellow, the so-called human being, the physical body and the consciousness trapped inside, this is the physical form, understand? Physical form means the body, the rupa. Then there is a mind or consciousness trapped in the body. So these two combined, you call it the five aggregate of form and mind. Correct or not? So this is what you call you. Understand? The human being. And this is what the Buddha talked about. Understand? Understand? This fellow is born of karma, heir to your karma, conditioned and supported by your karma. And this fellow is what he is because of your karma. And this fellow is not you, understand? That's why this is the fake one. Karmically conditioned out for you to use, to live life. Karmically conditioned. Out. For you to use, to live life. That's why this is your tool and vehicle. The mind is your tool. The physical form is your vehicle to come to this world, to live life. And this one is subject to karma. That's why you must take care of all the action, speech, and thought created by this guy. Because this guy will create karma, good and bad. Then it will accumulate in that being's karmic nature. Understand? Then that karmic nature is the one that you will inherit. Every life you come, you are born of it, heir to it, conditioned and supported by it, and you are what you are because of it. But every life is a different form of mind, understand? It's a different segment, understand? That's why we call it one segment. Like this life, Brother Teo, this segment, is one of the segments of the many, many billions of birth and death. Similarly, you all, you have your own form and mind. And this is not you. This is only karmically conditioned out. This segment, you are a human being. Let's say previous life, you are a deva. Or you could be a non-human. Or even animal or whatever. Then, which one is you? The human being now, or previous life, the deva or the animal or what. None of these are you, understand? All these are karmically conditioned out, conditioned arising cause of, not a permanent unchanging entity. So this is what the Buddha meant by, the one that is born of your karma, heir to your karma, conditioned and supported by your karma. That's why in the Green Book, I explain, who are you, what are you? Initially, we start off with what? This human being is there. We cannot deny that there is a physical body, there is a consciousness trapped inside. Okay? So we are a combination of these two. So the Buddha called fire aggregate of form and mind. Then we investigate through Dhamma, through mindfulness. Is this you? That's why in the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, and even the first Noble Truth Final Summary, the Buddha make it very clear. Even the Heart Sutta, it say, the five aggregate of form and mind are empty, 无蕴皆空. That's why they are impermanent, lead to suffering, empty, non-self. It cannot be you. That's why the Buddha also say, this one is Anatta, non-self, not you. It has its characteristic, its condition arising, dependent originating. So this is the one you have to understand. If you cannot understand this, you cannot penetrate the teaching. Okay? Can you follow, Xuan Hua just says fake one, false one, but he didn't explain to you that this is the one, understand? Or? And this one is not you. That's why you have what they call the true nature or the Buddha nature. But this one is not a person, understand not? Like your karmic nature is a nature, understand not? This is your spiritual nature, your original nature, your true nature, your Buddha nature. But it's a nature, it's not a being, understand not? It's all the past cultivation through the form and mind, spiritual cultivation. You will inherit them. It will all be stopped. Then when you connect, every time you come with the form and mind, you need the form and mind. Then you have to meditate to connect. If you cannot connect, this spiritual nature is different from your karmic nature, understand? The karmic nature, the moment you are born of it, heir to it, conditioned and supported by it, and you are what you are because of it. So karmic nature immediately influences you, play a great role in your life. But spiritual nature is different. Spiritual nature, nothing to do with this form and mind yet. You have to connect to that true nature. That's why in Christianity, if you understand, you know what they tell you. Whatever that is born of flesh is flesh. Understand? Flesh body. But whatever that is born of spirit is spirit. That statement is very profound. Very, very profound. That's why they have to baptize, understand? Because they know the flesh body is not the true nature. So they are interested in the spirit, the Holy Spirit. But it's not the actual spirit, understand? Like the ghost, you also call that spirit. Means the unseen. But this one they call it the Holy Spirit, means Holy One. So when you understand, then you will cultivate. If you don't connect, that's why the heedless are as if dead. If you are not with the true mind, you cannot be mindful, you cannot be heedful. But this one can give you the direct seeing. It can allow you to cultivate and see things as they are, and develop all the understanding. The moment you have this wisdom and understanding, you connect to your true nature, then your spiritual nature, you will inherit whatever you have cultivated. That's why like this life, my nature come back. That's why this form of mind can understand many, many things. That's why I told you all many things which I share with you all, I never learned this life. Then where do I learn? Where do I learn? It's not from my karmic nature. It's from the spiritual nature. That's why Sakyamuni Buddha, you remember? When he was born as a prince, until the age of 29, he was still like a normal human being. Understand? A putujana, he has not connected. Then age 29, he renounced the world. He walked out of the palace. For 6 years, he cultivated. That time, he was not enlightened. Then at that night, under the Bodhi tree, when he connect, he became the Sammasambuddha. How did he become the Sammasambuddha? Well, he connect to that true nature and inherit everything. He has already perfected it. That's why that Sambhogayakaya, which is his spiritual understanding and spiritual nature, when it combined with the physical body, which is the Nimanakaya or functional body of the Buddha, it transformed the entity into Dhammakaya. That's why he became the Sammasambuddha that teach the Dhamma. That's why this Dhammakaya teaches the Dhamma. And it is a functional body that performs the function of a Buddha. But the spiritual nature, the understanding, is the Dhamma that he teach you. That's why you take refuge with the triple gem. You don't take refuge with the physical form. Understand? That's why the Buddha say, he who sees my Dhamma sees me. He never say, he who sees this Buddha form, Rupang, sees me. He never say that. This is his functional body. This is not his spiritual body. So who is the Buddha you pay respect to? You have gratitude towards. He is the embodiment of his perfection, the spiritual perfection of wisdom and virtue. That's why you have great respect for him. He is not just the physical form or the rupa. That's why when people tell you, your Buddha is a dead 2,000 over years ago, why you pay respect and worship him? They have an eternal God. The Almighty, more appealing. So how can you answer when you don't have the actual understanding and the Dhamma? Because that physical one is not the Buddha. The Buddha is all-knowing. Then they call, omniscient, is it? Omniscient. Means whatever that can be known, he knows. He understands. So he is the fully enlightened one, perfect in wisdom and virtue. That's why you can say he is the most virtuous and the most wise living being ever to be born in the whole universe at that time. So when you have that understanding, when you pay respect, you are not worshipping this Rupang, understand not? You recall to mind the great, what they call compassion, great loving kindness, and great virtue and perfection and wisdom of Lord Buddha. That is what the Buddha is, the embodiment of his perfection, his wisdom and virtue. And that is the one that you take refuge, that you go for refuge. And that is the one who is your guide, your teacher. That's why he is the guide without comparison. He is the teacher of man and God, that nine great virtue. He is the worthy one, blessed one, worthy one, fully enlightened one, endowed with virtue and wisdom. So all this you will come to understand when you develop the cultivation. So now you understand what that I is. Clear? So you got no more problem. Otherwise you say, how come the teaching like that one conflicting? The three universal characteristics say non-self. Then the Buddha say, you are born of your karma, head to your karma condition. So, and you are what you are because of your karma. And because of your greed, hatred, and delusion, you fall. Then die. Who die? What die? That's why you don't get confused. The form am I is the form am I. And that is not you. That's why the teaching never go wrong. The teaching is all the while correct and perfect. But when people cannot understand, they say it appears contradictory. When you say non-self, nobody, yet you got karma. Understand? You are born of it, head to it, condition. Then, do good, begets good. Do evil, begets evil. You say non-self and you got all this type of thing. That's why the Heart Sutta is the best. What did the Heart Sutta say? To explain all this. What did the Heart Sutta say? We just chant. Those classes that you gone through. He always, Kuan Yin always used the word in, through, emptiness. When in true emptiness, there is no four noble truth. No one born, no one die, no one sick. Understand? Or? No enlightenment. Nobody to be enlightened. No delusion, nothing. Because in true emptiness is the unconditioned. So all this karma thing, form and mind, belong to the conditioned world. Understand? Or? The Dhamma and the Four Noble Truth belongs to the conditioned world. For the form and mind to develop understanding so that you connect and go beyond. Understand not? Can follow, huh? Now I can go into this deeper because we have earlier on done all those things. The transcript also out already. Now it's for you to develop clear understanding of what this teaching. Chui, pass the mic. Pass the mic to Chui. Yeah. And you got anything that you are not sure or not clear, you should ask. Huh? Because this physical form and mind, huh? I don't know how many years it will last. Hopefully you will have another 20 years. Yeah, go ahead.
Brother Teo, I'm quite confused. Here we're talking about an unconditioned being, if you will, the true mind, where there is no form, no mind. What we have now is a human being which comprises of the five aggregates of form and mind.
Yes.
And that is the I, the you, the me, it is, right?
Yeah.
And then you are born of your karma.
Now,
the thing is, if there's true emptiness, like what you said in the Sinching, does that mean that all these minds are one only? I cannot understand.
Never mind, no, you continue with your question.
Each of us is a different conglomeration of all these different forms and minds in each in this
okay.
circle of
samsara. So what is your question?
So the question is, if you say that it's the unconditioned, that is true emptiness, does that mean that this emptiness is, well, comprises of all these individual...
Okay.
I don't know how to say it, but...
No, I think I know
what
your,
I mean?
I know your question. Good. Thank you so much. you all understand why he's trying to ask or not? He cannot reconcile. He said, what is this emptiness? In true emptiness, all these are not real, don't exist. Then he said, are we all the emptiness? Again, the atta want to come in. You already mentioned it's the unconditioned. Unconditioned means what? No word, no description, no mind. Understand not? Consciousness also ceases to be. So how can that one ask question? That one cannot ask question. That one need to be realized. How can you realize that state? How can you realize that state? I ask you that question. We have gone through many rounds. You meditate to become what? Oh, of course, to become enlightened, then realize Nibbana. So Nibbana is what? No form, no mind is correct. Means cessation of form and mind. Understand? Or? When your form and mind cease, when you completely no thought, no content, and the pure consciousness only also cease, then the mind that is no longer deluded realizes itself and cease. Understand not? It's no longer deluded. It does not cling on to any more thing, hold on to any more thing. So the absence of craving is enlightenment, is the cessation. The moment it ceases, you cannot talk. Understand not? There is no word, no mind, no description. So the unconditioned is not something that the conditioned world can understand. That's why you don't use thought. That's why it's beyond thought, beyond mind. I finish the explanation first. Because if you continue to use thought to try to rationalize and understand, too bad. So you can go on and on and on, and yet you cannot come out of it. Because it's completely beyond the conditioned world. That's why the Buddha say what? If it is not because there is the unconditioned, escape from the conditioned world is impossible. Understand? Huh? And now you understand. If it's not because there exists the unconditioned, escape from the conditioned world is impossible. That's why the teaching is so powerful. And the teaching, when it's realized, it is so beautiful. That's why Xing Jing, finally, what does the Heart Sutta say? He never say everything empty. You know. He say in true emptiness, existence is wonderful. Understand? Zhen Kong Miao Yu. True emptiness is wonderful existence. That's why you can live. You can develop that understanding. You have to understand both sides, the unconditioned and the conditioned. And then you know how to arise. You know how to come. You know how to use the form and mind without being deluded by it. That's why fifth patriarch, when he told the sixth patriarch, what did he told the sixth patriarch? Then the sixth patriarch become fully enlightened, not only enlightened, like great awakening. What did he told the sixth patriarch? No. That one is the Devan Sutta. This one is after he already developed the understanding. Then he went to the fifth patriarch who passed him the bowl. Then he transmit the mind to mind seal to him. He just explained this to him, no? After you realize that true mind, you must know how to use that and the mundane mind, and yet not to be what? Not to be affected and deluded by it, asana. Because that one is not you, asana. That one is your tool. So when you are not deluded by it, when there is no sakayaditi, no ignorance, then that becomes beautiful, understand? That's a wonderful existence. You can use it, like this body. You use it without having to worry about it getting old, getting sick, and die, understand? Wow, that is really, really marvelous, correct? Human beings' problem is, don't know how to use it, suffer like mad, yet fear of it getting sick, getting old, and die. Means you never get to understand what this form and mind is, what this physical body is. You attach and cling, and you worry so much. That's why you cannot develop the wisdom and understanding to use it. If you have that understanding, that awakening, then this is so beautiful. You not only don't complain, no. You actually have a lot of gratitude towards this body for giving you the condition to experience the world, to cultivate, to develop such great understanding, to experience all of the beauty and wonders of life, to understand life so clearly, to have this condition to actually develop the wisdom, to live the life of the Noble One, to experience the third phase of Dhamma, where you can live in this world without suffering, and yet you can experience all of the beauties and wonders of life. That is what enlightenment is all about. That is what they call life is all about. That's why life becomes wonderful. Existence becomes wonderful. You don't have to toil. You don't have to suffer anymore. You don't have to be afflicted anymore. You don't have to be deluded by what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile, you feel and think. The phenomenal world is so beautiful, so clear to you. The world of sight and sound is so beautiful, so meaningful. The good food that you can have, I don't want to use the word enjoy, you can have. And you can live the good life. You can travel. Civilization is so beautiful. The world is so beautiful. You have the means. Then you can have such great companions, loved ones. There are so much meaning and beauty in life. Even within the silence at home, when you're alone, consciousness can be so beautiful. I used to sit around and just experience all this consciousness. The senses has a lot of gratitude towards what the form and mind has given me. That it is so beautiful, so marvelous. I can use it for whatever. I can even go deep into the silent. But that one is not me, Anasana. That one is the form and mind karmically conditioned out. Then this wonderful existence, even though it's impermanent, arise within the moment and pass away. As real as it can be, it's only the moment. Split second is day and gone. But there is such thing as life, understand not? The moment. And the form and mind that has this understanding can realize it. That's why it does not think. It does not worry about life anymore. It just live. Be with the moment. In silent, beautiful awareness. To experience the pristine beauty of nature, the pristine beauty of every moment of life and consciousness, instead of worrying about life. Okay? And now you can ask. Yeah, pass the mic to Chui. Huh?
You didn't quite answer my question. Sorry about that. But essentially you said that in true emptiness, we use the body, the five aggregates, as a tool to live life. So really, there's no one at home, so to speak. If there's no one at home and everybody comes to the home, everybody is also true mind. Everybody is not home. There's nobody at home. Therefore, there's nothing. Is that what you're saying?
Don't worry. I repeat, you listen. This is where you get trapped. You are using your conscious mind, your mundane mind, to reason and understand the unconditioned. You can never do that. Understand? It's not that everything is empty, no one at home. Not like that. Understand? That one is not a human being. Understand? That one is not you. Understand? That's why sabbe dhammang anatta, even the unconditioned, is not you. There is nobody there. Understand? So don't try to use the thought to rationalize, to understand. It cannot. Then it doesn't mean that everybody can become like that. You have to have the form and mind, individual form and mind must realize itself. Then that cessation has to go through. Then that awakening is peculiar to that form and mind, understand not? That's why that form and mind will understand. And you can see that form and mind is enlightened after that. That's why it can never suffer anymore. But it is not you, understand not? If you deludedly think that is you and you enlightened, sorry, too bad. Then that is not the enlightenment that the Buddha talked about. Because the one that awakened even the first stage of sainthood, Sotapan, they will not even have a thought that that form and mind is what they are. That they are a Sotapan. It's in the Diamond Sutta, very clear. Where Subhati asked Sakyamuni, and Sakyamuni answered. Later on, we will go through. So, don't use the thought. It can never be rationalized. But you can have an understanding of it. Then you cultivate sincerely. Then when the realization comes, there is no word. And it's not like the Buddha said, what is this Dhamma? Can only be realized by the wise, each for themselves. That form and mind must go through the cessation and understand. Then there is no question. Then that form and mind will not ask question. Because it's understood. But before the form and mind realize, it can never understand. Because it used the thought to try to understand, which is knowledge. And knowledge cannot understand the unconditioned. Understand? I'm not trying to make it abstract. I'm trying to explain to you clearly that the Dhamma is like that. Push out the button. Push it out.
Therefore, can we say then that for the mundane mind, for this average putujana all here, we all have to at some point make a leap of faith?
No. You don't need to believe.
No, a leap of faith. A big leap, because you're talking about before you get to that stage, you really have to sort of like...
Yeah, but it's not a belief. It's
no,
not a belief.
Leap, L-E-A-P.
I know.
A leap, not a belief.
I know, leap of faith. Yes, means you try to get like a quantum leap.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about.
Unshakable faith.
Yes.
No, you cannot, because without wisdom, that faith cannot be unshakable. You have to have wisdom. How do you develop wisdom? Initially, it's the five spiritual faculty, I told you already. Then when you stabilize it, what happens? Your sati will be very stable. Then that is the first factor of enlightenment. Then what is the second factor of enlightenment? Sati sampajana. Dhamma vichaya. Dhamma investigate. You use that sati, which is the silent mind, to investigate the Dhamma that the Buddha teach. Then to realize the Nibbana or the enlightenment as mentioned by the Buddha. Initially, even before you realize that Nibbana or enlightenment, you can put to test all of his Dhammapada verse and teaching. Understand not? Dhammapada verse 1 and 2, 21, 22, 23, the Four Noble Truths, the Five Evil Roots, the Five Spiritual Faculty, the Three Evil Roots, the Five Mental Hindrance. Then you have the Dependent Origin. And you realize the teaching is so beautiful. It stand up to investigation. Then your faith becomes very, very strong. And you become very determined. Then every line you come, when you follow this teaching, you realize that nature becomes different. It develops. The spiritual nature develops. And every line you come, you connect, you realize this is what is happening. Understand? It's no more theory. It's no more knowledge. Understand? That's why I can tell you about karma is, end of the day, like in Hokkien, I used to say this word, you have to believe in the law of karma. It will come back and haunt you and hit you until you wake up. Understand? It's just like that. Nature's law. Immediately it show it to you during the cultivation. It hit back just like that. And it's so potent. That's why you never dare to play a fool with karma or take for granted. That's why you use the word never play with karma. This is a serious matter. That's why the first right view is law of karma. And from there, most of his teaching come about. The Buddha's advice to avoid all evil, do good, and purify the mind. Because he realized the seriousness of karma. If you are born of your karma, heir to your karma, conditioned and supported by your karma, and you are what you are because your karma means what? Karma plays such a great role in your life, understand? No? That's why I use that word. Last time, Sui An cannot understand. I said 99.99999% karmically driven. Later on, he understand. Because the Buddha make it very clear in the five daily contemplation, the last one, and you can put to test. Really? Every life you come, you realize, like this life, I look back, all from the karmic nature before this nature connect in 1989. It's all karma. How this form of mind become what it is? Cannot be so perfect one. Then how come the Kuan Yin nature come and save this form of mind for 3 times before it connect? No such thing. Then how come, like I used to tell my mother, you got 9 children, 6 brothers, 3 sisters, from the same family, same parents, same environment. Then when we all grew up, you know what happened? Everyone is so different. Some of my brothers and sisters, they are tall. Some are very short. A few very hairy ones, just a lot of hair. Then one or two, very rare one, no hair one. Nothing. I don't know whether you call that fully evolved or the hairy one not so evolved. Oh, I don't know. But you look at them. Some cannot study completely. Standard 6 also cannot pass. Some form 3. Drop out. Some very good academic. Go all the way from a slum, from a very small town, a rural state, a rural school. Went all the way to university and become very good. How do you explain all this? Some very spiritual, some non-spiritual at all. But somehow they connect to the Dhamma in a different way. They go tsuji and do all these things. Yeah. So all this is what the nature's law is all about. And when you understand nature's law, the law of karma is so beautiful, so powerful, so important. And if you don't hit by it, develop the understanding of it, you will suffer tremendously. If you don't have that right view, first noble eightfold path, samadhi, you will suffer. You will become afflicted life after life. That's why living beings suffer a lot. Then even you believe, you don't know how to attend to it, you don't know how to ask for forgiveness, repentance, the karmic obstruction, when it comes, you cannot break through. You cannot do anything about it. That's why human beings have to face a lot of suffering. Even a lot of Buddhists don't understand all this teaching. So what you expect? It is not something that you can go and research through knowledge. No, you have to cultivate. You have to realize it and awaken to it. Then as you develop more and more understanding through your Dhamma investigation, your faith become more and more strong. Then later one day when you connect, that's why the second factor is what? The faith in the Triple Gem is unshakable. Remember? Then no more rite and ritual. So this is what the teaching is all about. It can bring forth that understanding. Otherwise he is not the Sammasambuddha. Understand? So this teaching is something that is really, really beautiful. And you have faith, you diligent, and you sincere, you will be able to realize. And this era is the best. Yeah, this is the best window. I always remind you all, don't miss this window, I tell you. Otherwise you have to wait very, very long. Don't miss doesn't mean you have to make it all the way before you die. No. Means you establish this understanding and do everything that you need to make sure in future you will have this understanding whenever you arise. That's why make the aspiration, make that what they call determination or adhitan, by the power of whatever wholesomeness, merits and blessing that this nature of mine has cultivated from the distant past until now. I vow life after life to have this type of understanding so that I will not be deluded anymore, so that I can continue with my cultivation. Then you will know how to ask for forgiveness and continue with the teaching. You determine to be heedful, to be mindful, to have this right view, right understanding of the teaching and the Dhamma. And you vow not to be heedless anymore. Then when you come in future, all this vow, because you invoke power of merit through nature's law, it will bring about causes and conditions for you to connect and have this understanding. That's why perfection of aspiration or adhitana is one of the 10 perfection that the Maha or the Bodhisattva has to cultivate. That's why all Buddhas has this special perfection, adhitana, or aspiration or vow. And they are very powerful. That's why Sakyamuni only teach you the simple one. After the Dhamma sharing, he asks you to chant what? Imina punyang kamina. But that is the most important one actually. So that you always avoid the foolish, meet up with the wise, so that enlightenment can be realized as soon as possible. If you don't avoid the foolish and meet up with the wise, I tell you, you will debate like anything. Understand? Yeah. 10 perfection. One of the 10 perfection. It's called adhitana in Pali. In Thai, they call it adhitan. They say, make adhitan. Sammasambuddha. The Bodhisattva has to cultivate this 10 perfection until it's fully perfected. Then the Mahayana simplify it to 6. So this adhitan is a very important understanding, because with this you will not get lost. Otherwise it's very easy to debate, I tell you. Because the teaching is not what you think. Even now with the sasana, based on your understanding, you will know why I say that. Remember sati? That word alone is so confusing to people. Understand? How many people really understood the real sati? Yeah. If you cannot even develop the understanding of sati, then you cannot understand what is heedfulness. And if you cannot understand what is heedfulness, the Buddha make it very clear, the heedless eyes is dead. You can't even be heedful. Then all the thought-based meditation, you will debate. Well, you don't know what sati is, and you interpret sati. Then what are the right views also people cannot understand? Because they cannot connect to the teaching. Then, what is right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood? In the teaching, it's very superficial. They only describe to you very briefly what constitutes right thought. You go and check all the book. What constitutes right thought? Most books write the four Brahma Vihara. Metta, Karuna, Mudita, and Upeka. He said, you have these four mind state, you have right thought. But they never teach you the other right thought. They never teach you what constitutes wrong thought. To me, it's very important to understand what is wrong thought. When you understand what is wrong thought, then you are incapable of wrong thought. And that is more important. Just like Krishnamurti said, don't try to be good, understand? The absence of evil is good. Karena, when you are incapable of evil, you automatically become good, understand? Then why are you trying to become good? That is good according to you, understand? Which is not nature's laws good, understand? So when you understand what constitutes evil, the evil roots, the greed, the selfishness, the anger, the hatred, the envy, the jealousy, the delusion, the fear, the worry, the anxiety, all these are evil roots. They make you evil. Then you realize what are wrong thought. Thought that has all these are wrong thought. That's why Dhammapada verse 1 and 2, they didn't define properly. They just say, mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. If you act, speak, and think with a pure mind or wholesome mind, then happiness will follow you like the shadow that never leaves you. That if you are heedless, then you act, speak, and think with an evil mind or a heedless mind, then suffering will follow you like the wheel that follows the hood. But they never explain, asana. When you act, speak, and think with an evil mind, means you have the evil root. That has the evil roots of greed, hatred, and anger. When you put these three things in, then people understand, asana. People can investigate. Otherwise, they don't even know what constitutes evil. What constitutes wrong thought? And now we go back again, revise. What constitutes wrong thought? What are wrong thought? Huh? So that you can recognize them. Yeah, just now before I rub off, it was all there. What constitutes wrong thought? Thought that condition your? Fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, lamentation, selfishness, anger, envy, jealousy, hatred, and all the evil roots. They constitute wrong thought. That's why I say, whenever you are not peaceful and unhappy, the evil roots are there. You are heedless. When your evil roots are there, you become evil. Isn't it? It's the root of all evil. The three evil roots. When you are angry, what happened to you? You become evil. Isn't it? You become violent. Isn't it? And you stress yourself out. Isn't it? And you are very unhappy, isn't it? And you are not peaceful. That's why the evil roots are there. When you have jealousy, envy, hatred, fear, worry, anxiety, all those are wrong thoughts. That's why the Buddha say, things that are unfit for attention, don't pay attention, because these are wrong thoughts. Bring about suffering. Brings about misery, affliction, evil roots. What are the things that are fit for attention? The Four Noble Truths, which has the Noble Eightfold Path. These are the things that are fit for attention, the three turnings. And when you contemplate and reflect, there is no anger, there is no delusion, there is no selfishness, there is only Dhamma. You understand clearly what suffering is and the cause behind. Then you come to realize that all this suffering are unnecessary. Suffering need not be if I have the wisdom and the understanding. Then how do I realize this? I only need to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. It will lead to the end of all suffering. And then the teaching becomes so beautiful. Then your mind state becomes so beautiful. No negativity. That's why Noble Eightfold Path will lead to the end of all suffering. Then you become a noble one. That is the true enlightened being that the Buddha talked about. The one with the Noble Eightfold Path. You are very noble in your understanding of life because you got right view of the nature's law that governs life and existence. You are very noble in the way you arise your thought. That's why you have right thought. Perfect thought. Beautiful thought. And you are very noble in the way you communicate with people. Talk to people. Speak to people. And the way you go about doing things. You are very gentle. Very pleasant. Very understanding. You have a lot of what they call contentment. Gratitude. Respect towards those who are worthy of respect. You have a lot of sincerity, a lot of honesty. And you are so beautiful. You are a blessing to all. You are so helpful, so generous, so full of humility, simplicity. You are incapable of negativity because you got Noble Eightfold Path. Then you are constantly cultivating the right effort to abandon the wrong thought, to prevent the arising of wrong thought, wrong action, and wrong speech. Then to refine upon and purify all your right thought, right speech, right action, so that it becomes perfect. Then whatever that is still not in you, you arise the right effort to cultivate them. Your sincerity, your perseverance, your faith, your spiritual faculties, your seven factors of enlightenment. All of the virtue that is still not in you, you cultivate them all. And this is what the Buddha meant by an enlightened being with the Noble Eightfold Path factor. Then you are ever mindful, heedful. Then you have samadhi, equanimity, born of wisdom. So these are the great qualities of the enlightened being. And this is what the teaching can offer you. So it's up to you, because it's your life. If you choose to doubt, you are entitled to doubt. But if I were you, I will never turn back. From that moment in 1971, when I saw the Four Noble Truths, I went all out to cultivate. Because I realized this is so important to life. Not only this life, to all of my future coming. That's why human beings are very different. Everyone is different. A lot of people still don't really understand the what they call uniqueness of this civilization, this so-called window of opportunity, where the sasana is still around, where the consciousness has turned and become so beautiful. And this is the best window to really, really perfect them and to develop all this understanding so that in future you don't have to worry anymore. Everything will be set. With this understanding now, if you are sincere, you have the faith and you persevere, then you make the aspiration, you will never get lost anymore. But you have to determine very strongly. Like in Hokkien, you heard of here, Lo Guan. Means very severe. You vow, no. Not only I aspire, no. I vow, no. When you make a vow, means you are very serious about it. Understand, no? It's like they all say, "Chu chua." You know what they commit themselves, no? If they don't fulfill, lightning will strike them. But you don't go and make that type of stupid vow. Understand, no? Why you want lightning to strike you? As long as you are sincere, determined, you just vow. Maybe you may think, like that only I serious, otherwise I'm not serious. Then you walk out the house, lightning on it, you panic like anything. So don't be gullible, huh? Can, yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Today you've said a lot of very good things, very interesting and very useful, enlightening things, like the first right view is the law of karma, the qualities of the enlightened being, and so on. I think it'd be a great idea if one of these days, instead of having a retreat, we have a workshop where we divide people in different groups and we work out.
Not bad. I think this is a good idea.
And see what we can do.
We can have this workshop at Sumiro. Huh? Yeah, we go Sumiro.
When is that?
Huh? This 23rd. You didn't receive the notice, ah? This 23rd. Those who haven't been, sorry, Sui An haven't sent out. I just spoke to him. I just WhatsApp him. He said he will send it out. But he's not around. He will be going to Kota Baru with Mi Fong.
I find that if we are in little groups, and we do the reporting, we all learn to present.
Yeah. It's better.
As a group, we will sort of...
You learn faster.
Encourage each other and motivate each other.
It's good. That is a good suggestion. Thank you. We say sadhu. Sadhu. Yeah, it's a workshop that allows us to develop more understanding of certain topic, especially the essential Dhamma and the, like she said, understanding what this important right view is leading to the noble quality of an enlightened being, and how you can live all this, and the possibility of doing all this. So this type of workshop can be very meaningful. But we need active participants. We cannot have like most of the time reporting or look down. any question or look down? except Chui. Luckily got Chui. Sometimes got Hui Rong. Which is good. We have to have active participation. So that you learn. Like that day, Sunday class, I think Sister May and Engbi, they ask. Where they cultivate, that's why they know these are the things they encounter. Then they ask. Otherwise, daily mindfulness, she will not progress. She will get stuck. Now she understands. Then today, the bowing. You do the bowing. It will make your daily mindfulness a lot better. Every morning, actually, when you wake up after you brush your teeth or what, then you just bow 5-10 minutes. Then only you want to meditate. After that, your meditation become very different. You progress very fast. Then your daily mindfulness, like I explained just now, it become very different. The mind like got no thought. Then it's always with the movement. Because when you bow, body and mind as one, body and mind as one. This is your new way of decondition your heedless thinking into a heedful way of bowing. Then most of the time you are mindful. Body and mind is one. Body and mind is one. Then when you do it until it's so graceful, until like no need to practice anymore. Understand? It's automatic. Zoom. Automatic. So graceful. It's just like those dancers who can dance very graceful. They are so mindful. Understand? Every movement, every of this, what they call minute activity and action, they are aware, they are, because they have the love, the passion, and they train very hard, and they do it until no need to think on, automatic they will do it, understand? It's a part of you, and that is real sati. So just do, don't try to know, and don't go and ask question while you bow, am I doing it correct? Brother Teo say, I must recite. All this is verbalization, the thought active, you cannot be mindful anymore. Forget about what the Buddha say, what the book say, what Brother Teo say. You just do, like swimming. Go in and swim. Drink some water. And then you will know what swimming is. If you're so scared of going into the pool and scared of drowning, you can never learn how to swim. You know how the trainer, last time I remember I sent my son to the Shah Alam Government Club. 3-4 years old, no? teaching them how to swim. The coach say, okay, you go and change, then you bring your kid out. You know what he did? He take my kid and just throw into the pool. Look, he don't even know how to swim. Throw him in the pool. Hey, don't worry, Mr. Teo, they will learn how to swim. Like that, learn faster. Then naturally, they got no fear because they are so young. Then they know how to come out. Then after that, they like to go into the water. He keep on putting them into the water. Then they know how to surface. And then they learn very fast. Because we all grow up already. We heard people say can drown, can die. That psychological fear behind will make you fearful. Then you dare not believe what the coach tell you. Just let go everything. Don't resist. The buoyancy will come out and you will float. But the moment you do that, your body go down. Because the gravity bring you down. Well, the buoyancy force take a while to build up, understand not? Then when the water display by this body, the buoyancy become the uptra. Then it will push you out. And because you are lighter than water, you will float. You must experience the buoyancy. When you experience that force pushing you out, you have faith already. This is what the coach tell me. Then when you meditate until you realize what that sati is, this is what Brother Teo tell me, share with me. Then you'll become very different. Then no need to talk with you. Like now, Brother Song and me and a few Kayamita, we don't have to talk about all those things anymore. We understand each other. That is what the Dhamma is all about, silent mind. That Dhamma come from the silent mind. That type of teaching. Okay, we better end. That one's 3 minutes slow. So I have to end. So we rejoice and thank Chui for the good question. Sadhu, 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 and the good suggestion. So we stop at page 51. Okay. We start at 51. Okay, now we can maybe do the sharing of merits, transfer merits. Then after that, you can make your aspiration. Today is the first time I'm on time. Every time I go beyond time. Alicia listened to the recording. He always laughs. Rati always mentioned the exceeded how long. Today, ahead of time, 3 minutes ahead of time. Okay, sharing of merits with the devas. Akasata ca bhumata deva naga mahindika punyang tang animo itwa rang rakan tu loka sasana. May all beings inhabiting space and earth, devas and nagas of mighty power, share these merits. And may they long protect the dispensation. Itta watta chamehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya. May all beings share these merits which we have thus acquired, and may all devas rejoice, and may it contribute greatly to their well-being and happiness. Transfer merits to the departed one. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya tayo. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya tayo. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya tayo. Let this merits accrue to our departed relatives, and may they all too be well and happy always. Devo vasatu kalena sasa sampati heto cha vito bhavatu loko cha raja bhavatu dhammiko. May the rainfall in due season, may there be a rich and good harvest throughout, may the world be peaceful and prosperous always, may the government of the day, the king and the rulers be righteous. Now you make your aspiration. Itmina punyang kamina mami bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yawa nivana patiya. By the grace of these merits that we have thus acquired, may we never follow the foolish, But only the wise and the enlightened one, until Nibbana is realized. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to all the Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, and all the worthy ones. Help to bring the kueh and all those things over the other side, huh?